Forgotten memories of other patients I had reduced to this grotesque state in the past suddenly came back to me. A man with an aneurysm in his brain, one of the first such operations I had carried out on my own as a senior registrar. Another was an operation I had done on a man with a blood vessel malformation in his brain. Unlike with this man, where the stroke occurred 3 days after the operation, with both these patients, the operation had gone badly and they had suffered major strokes during the procedures. They had both looked at me afterwards with the same terrible, dumb anger and fear, a look of utter horror, unable to talk, unable to understand speech, the look of the damned in some medieval depiction of hell. With the second patient, I remember the intense relief when I came to work next morning to find that he had suffered a cardiac arrest, as though the sheer trauma of what had happened to him had proved too much for his heart. The resuscitation team were working away at him. They were clearly not achieving anything, so I told them to stop and leave him in peace. I do not know what happened to the other man, other than that he survived. At least the Italian man seemed merely puzzled and looked at me with a vague and empty expression. I had many long and emotional conversations with the family later that day. This involved floods of tears and much embracing. It is difficult to explain, let alone to understand what it must be like to have no language, to be unable either to understand what is said to one or put one's thoughts into words. After major strokes, people can die from brain swelling, but this patient remained unchanged for 48 hours, and the next evening I assured the family that he would not die, although I did not know if he would regain his speech, and rather doubted it. Nevertheless, 2 days later, at 1 o'clock in the morning, he deteriorated. My young and inexperienced registrar rang me. "He's gone off and blown both his pupils," he excitedly told me. "Well, if both pupils are blown, that means he's coned. He's going to die. There's nothing to be done," I told him. "Coning refers to the way in which the brain is squeezed like toothpaste out of the hole in the base of the skull when the pressure in the skull becomes very high. The extruded part of the brain is cone-shaped. It is a fatal process." I went to bed, having growled to my registrar that I was not going to come in, but I couldn't get to sleep, and instead drove into the hospital. The streets deserted, apart from a single fox, confidently trotting across the road in front of the hospital, summer rain falling. The empty hospital corridors were ringing with the family's cries, including the 3-year-old granddaughters. So I gathered them all together and sat in a chair facing them and explained things and told them how sorry I was. The patient's wife was on her knees in front of me, clasping her hands, begging me to save her husband. This went on for half an hour or so. It felt longer. They came to accept the inevitability of his death, and perhaps even that it was better for him than to live without language. I remember another time I had had a patient die from a stroke after an operation. The family had sat staring at me, glaring at me and saying nothing as I tried to explain and to apologize. It was quite clear they hated me and felt that I had killed their father. But this family was extraordinarily kind and considerate. His daughters said that they did not blame me, and that their father had had great confidence in me. Eventually, we parted. One of the daughters brought the 3-year-old granddaughter to me, who had now stopped crying. She looked up at me with two large and dark eyes above her tear-stained cheeks. "Kiss the doctor good night, Maria, and say thank you." Maria laughed happily as we rubbed each other's cheeks. "Good night. Sweet dreams, Maria," I dutifully said. My registrar had been watching all this. He thanked me for sparing him the painful task of talking to the family. Terrible job, neurosurgery. Don't do it, I said as I went past him on my way to the door. I passed the patient's wife, standing beside the public phone in the corridor as I walked to the front door. Remember my husband? Please think of him sometimes, she said, reaching a despairing hand out to me. Remember him in your prayers. I remember all my patients who die after operations, I said, adding to myself as I left, I wish I didn't. I was relieved that he had died. If he had survived, he would have been left terribly disabled. He had died because of the operation, but not as a result of any obvious mistake on my part. I do not know why the stroke had happened or what I could have done to avoid it. So, just for once, I felt, at least in theory, innocent. But when I arrived home, I sat in my car outside my house, the rain falling in the dark, for a long time before I could drag myself off to bed. Chapter 17. Empema. Noun. A condition characterized by an accumulation of pus in a body cavity. It was a simple list. A craniotomy for a tumour with a couple of routine spinal operations to follow. The first patient was a young man with a glioma on the right side of his brain that could not be removed completely. I had operated for the first time 5 years ago. He had remained perfectly well, but his follow-up brain scans showed that the tumour was starting to grow back again, and further surgery was now required, which would hopefully keep him alive for a few more years. He was unmarried and running his own business in IT. We got on well together whenever we met in the outpatient clinic, and he had taken the news that he now needed further surgery with remarkable composure. "We can hope that another op will buy you some extra years," I told him, "but I can't promise it. It might be much less, and the operation is not without some risks." "Of course you can't promise, Mr. Marsh," he replied. I carried out his operation under local anaesthetic so that I could check directly, simply by asking him, that I was not producing any paralysis down the left side of his body. When I tell a patient that I think I should do their operation under local anaesthetic, they usually look a little shocked. In fact, the brain cannot itself feel pain, since pain is a phenomenon produced within the brain. If my patients' brains could feel me touching them, they would need a second brain somewhere to register the sensation. Since the only parts of the head that feel pain are the skin and muscles and tissues outside the brain, it is possible to carry out brain surgery under local anaesthetic with the patient wide awake. Besides, the brain does not come with dotted lines saying, "cut here," or "don't cut there," and tumours of the brain usually look, more or less, like the brain itself, so it is easy to cause damage. If, as was the case here, the tumour was growing near the movement area in the right side of his brain that controlled the left side of his body, the only certain way I had of knowing if I was doing any damage while I operated was by having him awake. It is much easier to carry out brain surgery under local anaesthetic than you might think, provided that the patient knows what to expect and trusts the surgical team, especially the anaesthetist, who will look after the patient while the operation proceeds. This man coped especially well, and while I worked away, he talked happily with my anaesthetist, Judith. They remembered each other from the first operation, and it was like listening to two old friends as they talked about holidays and families and recipes. He was a keen cook, while every few minutes Judith would ask him to move his left arm and leg and make sure that he could still move them as I worked on his brain with my sucker and diathermy. So it was indeed a straightforward operation, and after supervising my registrar with the two spinal cases, I walked round to the ITU to see that he was fine, chatting to the nurse looking after him. I left the hospital to travel into central London, where I had a conference to attend. I took my folding bicycle on the train to Waterloo. It was a singularly cold day with freezing rain, and the city looked bleak and grey. I sighed.